Welcome into yet another edition of Preds Insiders, ESPN 1025. The game, Ryan Porth, your host here, alongside Jeremy K. Gover of thegamenashville.com and the Nashville Predators Radio Network. K is for knowledge. Gover, what up?
Porth, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic.
We spoke through the radio, but we spoke yesterday, last night, after the,
we did.
After the big win.
We did. You said, thanks, Porth. I'm here with Matt Irwin.
That I did.
And then you said, back up to you, Porth.
That's right. That was us talking.
Yeah. That was our communication last
night.
Yeah,
we're adults now, so that's about, that's about as good as it gets.
We are live here at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs, site of Smash Roll Live coming up at the top of the hour. Kyle Turris, Dan Hamus will be the player guest, and Braden Gall and Hal Gill will be here to host the show as well. So come on out. Still some space here at Brewhouse South for you to come out, grab a table, get some great food, and enjoy a great show coming up at 7. And Gover, last night I thought it was a great game from the Nashville Predators. 5-2. It wasn't perfect by any means.
No.
San Jose definitely had their stretches in that game where they took over and they had the Preds on their heels. But knowing how talented and how capable that Sharks team is, even though they were 0-3 going in, the fact that they were able to withstand that pressure and have a killer instinct in that third period and win 5-2, I thought that was pretty impressive.
It was impressive, because, and I asked a couple of the players this before the game and, of course, after the game in my post-game comments to Matt Irwin, was there a focus of any kind to suffocate the Sharks? Because they have talent, but they've gotten off to a rocky start. They were 0-3 coming into the game, like you mentioned. But what you did not mention, which I find still more fascinating, is that they had scored a grand total of 3 goals coming in their 3 games coming into the game. So I was asking about that. Was there any kind of attention paid to saying we're going to suffocate these guys? Because you know that once the Sharks, or a good team like that, gets confidence, the opponent is in trouble, right?
Right.
So they said there was an element of that for sure, but then they wanted to play their game. It's still early in the season. They kind of want to work out the kinks as they see them and that kind of thing. So I thought it was a very good performance. You're right. The second period, there was a lot to be desired there for the Predators.
Outshot 18-7.
Yes, and the Sharks really kind of had that snowball going downhill, but the Predators did hold tight enough to where it never – the Sharks were never really in the game score-wise.
Here's where I thought that game turned in the third period, because it wasn't just the second period where the Sharks turned it up 2 or 3 notches. They had a power play with a fresh sheet of ice to open the third period.
Yes.
And Brent Burns had a one-time opportunity in the left circle where, standing on the other side of the arena, I thought, game tied. That's going in. And Pecorine anticipated that pass over to Brent Burns. He made that save. The Preds kill that penalty. That was number one turning point. Number two was Kyle Turris. Kyle Turris scoring that third goal to make it 3-1 and give them some room and pad that lead before Philip Forsberg then made it 4-1. I thought the save by Pecorine on that penalty kill combined with the Turris goal, that was a big swing in that third period where it easily could have been tied, and a couple minutes later it was 3-1.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you there. Ryan Johansson goes to the box at the tail end of the second period, setting up that fresh sheet of
ice. Nullifying a power play that they did have.
Right, that's correct. And so you're right, Brent Burns has that prime scoring chance. Rene shuts the door. And that's what I think that's lost, Porth, in a lot of the hockey that we watch over time, is you want your goaltender to be good. You kind of are hoping that for that magical 30 save a night number, right? But it's really about making the saves at the right times, and that was a great example of that. Pecorine made a key stop. He was great the rest of the night, but he made a key stop at the key time of the game to keep that game where it was.
Well, in years past, Pecorine makes acrobatic save after acrobatic save. That was not an acrobatic save.
No, not at all.
He's been really, really good positionally here in the last 2-3 seasons, and that was an example of that, of how he anticipated that shot or that pass going from the corner across ice to Brent Burns, and he was right there on the money where he didn't have to make an acrobatic save. to keep that puck from going to the back of the net.
Now, Brent Burns, he did cash in eventually, but it was, again, you're right, after the Kyle Turris goal and then the Philip Forsberg goal about four and a half minutes later.
Yeah.
And at that point, the game is basically over. It's not really. I mean, obviously, we've seen some fluky things happen, but, you know, for the most part, with 4.5 minutes left, Brent Burns makes it 4-2. They'd have to have a pretty they'd have to get a pretty lucky bounce at that point to get any kind of confidence, especially,
right,
again, with the way their season has started, 3 goals in 3 games coming into last night.
Right. And then Dante Fabbro, the empty net goal to make it 5-2. Hal Gill, all night long, during the game and after the game, was praising just how Dante Fabbro looked and how poised, calm, cool, collected he was, not only last night but so far young in his career.
Right, but last night he shut down an odd man rush. He had a quick stick on a cross-ice pass that for sure would have been a scoring chance if it doesn't go in. For, you know, we never know, of course, until it actually happens, right?
Right.
Brent Burns is a great example of that. The save you just mentioned about how, you know, if Rene doesn't anticipate that, that's a goal. It's the same thing. We don't know if he would have scored or not, but he broke up a cross-ice pass with a quick stick. There was a lot of and then, of course, he got the goal, and then he actually led a charge as well, an offensive charge, I think, right before the snowball kind of came downhill in the Sharks' favor at the beginning of the second period. So Dante Fabbro looked really, really good. I've loved his game in the first part of the season here, and I'm just interested to see where this goes. I don't expect him to have, you know, a lull or some sort of, like, plateau or anything. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, right, this kid's got, what, 12, 13 games maybe of NHL experience still? Like, we're going to forget
13.
That.
13.
Yeah, because he looks like he belongs. Mm-hmm. And so it's really encouraging to see that, and he's only going to get better in time, you would think.
I tweeted out this stat last night in the third period.
And it was a heck of a stat, by the way.
Martin Jones has – thank you. Martin, you just – in those 3 seconds, you just showed me 10 times more respect for that stat than Hal Gill did on the postgame.
Well, that's unfortunate.
I love Hal, but he just poo-pooed it as, you know, those are just facts.
You're my friend and stuff, and I'd love to stick up for you, but he's bigger than me, so we're not going to have this conversation later, are we?
No, we're not.
Okay, when he's here, that's what I mean.
No, okay, no. He will be here.
I know. That's what
he's probably listening right now.
Well.
Anyway, Martin Jones, San Jose goaltender, has now allowed 4-plus goals in each of his last 8 starts, playoffs included, at Bridgestone Arena. Every time he steps in that building, the Preds light him up like a Christmas tree.
So think about what that means. And I don't know what the actual number is, although I'm sure in your research you do, maybe. But that is a goals against average of 4 or more.
4.10.
See? That's not a recipe for success. I don't care if it's against one team or against one division or in a building or what, or whatever it is. If you have a 4-0, that's not good.
No.
That is not good.
Not good at all. And the save percentage is 855.
Which is even worse.
In those 8 starts.
Yeah. I say that because the Sharks traditionally have a high-powered offense, right? So you think, okay, well, Martin Jones allows 4. We can probably get 5 or 6. When you have an 857, that's just a bad all around.
Yeah, exactly. So I found that stat to be interesting. And, look, the Sharks are in a bad way right now.
Yeah.
0-4, the only team to be winless through 4 games.
And they signed Patrick Marleau,
who's an
original Shark, by the way. Not original Shark, sorry. He was originally a Shark. That's
right.
What I meant. Before going and having a cup of coffee with Toronto. He's back now with the Sharks, and they put him on the first line today. So tonight, tomorrow when they play, he's a first-line 40-year-old player.
That is a very top-heavy team.
Yes.
They quickly lost a lot of depth.
Yes, they did.
Off a team that went to the Western Conference Final.
Yeah, with Joe Pavelski going to Dallas.
Right.
Yeah, it's not – I think they had a couple trades, I believe, too, did they not? Like, didn't Donskoy – isn't he a free agent? He went somewhere?
He left to go to Colorado.
Yeah,
they traded Justin Braun.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of, Justin Braun.
Yeah, so they did lose some
depth.
Quality depth
yeah.
on that team in addition to Joe Pavelski. I think tomorrow night – is going to be a pretty good test for the Preds team. I said this with Floyd Reese during the afternoon show, that the first 3 opponents, I don't think, bring the kind of test that Washington will tomorrow night. Minnesota, not good. Detroit, not good. You just can't beat them to save your life. 10 out of the last 11, I have no idea why. But 10 of your last 11 against the Red Wings have won when the Red Wings have stunk.
Right, but the Predators also had a really poor first period in that game that all the players admitted to.
They did, and the Red
and
Wings
that was enough to make the difference.
Had adrenaline. It was their first game of the season, but still. Anyway, Detroit's not very good.
Right.
San Jose is struggling, but Washington is good.
Right.
They have started the season on a good note.
Got
so
points in all four games.
So I think that will be a quality test Thursday night. And then Saturday, celebrate the grand opening of the brand new state-of-the-art Fordyce Center in Bellevue. That is Saturday at 2 p.m. I will be there with Justin Bradford from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. with a little bit of Preds Extra. And there's going to be a whole lot going on. There will be giveaways, free food, free public skate, and kids activities. Plus Nash and the Preds Energy team will be there. It's the grand opening celebration of Fordyce Center in Bellevue at 7638 B Highway 70 South this Saturday at 2 p.m. So that should be a lot of fun. There's going to be a watch party for Preds Kings because it's a late afternoon game. It's not a late night game, thank God.
A 10:30 start.
Yeah. So
the old 10:30 West Coast start.
Yeah. So that should be a lot of fun on Saturday. Hope everyone can make it out to that. Hope everyone can make it here to Brewhouse South in Cool Springs for Smash Live coming up at the top of the hour. But coming up next, is this Preds offense going to be better than we had expected? We will debate that coming up next. He's Jeremy K. Gover. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders live from Brewhouse South in Cool Springs on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth, Jeremy K. Gover here with you. Preds Insiders live from Brewhouse South in Cool Springs, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders brought to you every Monday and Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m., brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry for all your dental needs. Visit KellyERice.com. Cool Springs Laser Dentistry just down the street from here at Brewhouse South. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Cary Zire Remax Elite, and Geno's East on the corner of 3rd and Korean Veterans Boulevard. Okay.
You done?
I'm done. So last night, the Nashville Predators beat the San Jose Sharks 5-2, and 13 goals in three games. Pretty impressive start.
It is impressive.
To this season after what happened in the offseason, in which they trade P.K. Subban, a star defenseman, with the cap space generated by that, they sign Matt Duchene in for agency, star center, and I didn't really know what to expect. I was kind of in a wait-and-see mode with this forward lineup. As the preseason went along, I was thinking, huh, there might be something here. They may – this Forsberg, Duchene, Granlund line has potential. But what we've seen in the first three games, for me, has been better than I had expected.
For me, it was all about whether Granlund was going to be able to come back and be the player they thought they were getting when they traded for him last year. And I think it's clear to say, it's safe to say that that's exactly what they got, right? They're getting this guy who was a perennial 60-point player – who could not only set up but also shoot with some accuracy. And he's fitting in really well with Matt Duchene and Philip Forsberg right now, even though his stats aren't as boastful as the other two. He really is a main cog in that wheel. He's creating chances. He's creating space for those guys. I mean, there's a lot of really good things and exciting things to be happy about if you're a Predators fan in that regard. You want to see him get rewarded more often, obviously, but that'll come in time, I think. I predicted on the game Nashville.com in the beginning of the season, Granlund would get 60 points, Duchene would get 60 points, and Forsberg would get 60 points. Mm-hmm. And I still believe that's going to be the case, even though he's only got one goal right now.
Duchene and Forsberg could crack 70.
Oh, for sure. They stay healthy the whole time. And yeah. Right, that's, yeah, no question. I just didn't want to go that bold.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
You know, so I was like, all right, well, let's put it 60.
You have a limit on your boldness.
Yeah. I don't want to go all hot take central. I just want to be, okay, these 60 is a good, safe, but yet riskiest, that's not even a word, risky-esque number.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and plus, this team should welcome any 60-point score. I mean, think of it. Johansson gets 60 points, Forsberg gets 60 points, Duchene gets 60 points, and Granlund gets 60 points.
What about Yossi?
And then Arvidsson gets 30 goals, and Yossi gets 60, 55 or 60 points. I mean, there's, it'd be very little to complain about, right?
Right.
So, I think you'd take it all day long.
I think you absolutely would, and by the way, Matt Duchene slacking last night. Only one assist.
I know.
Come on.
Yeah, I mean, start pulling his weight
around
here.
Got three assists opening night.
It's
two
ridiculous.
Assists Saturday.
It's ridiculous.
How can you only end up with one assist?
He's joking. Trending down, Paul.
We're
trending down.
He's only on pace now for 164 points this season.
That is a far cry from the 207 he was on before.
I know, right? So, I just, look, it's three games, and they will go through some ebbs and flows.
Of course.
There's just a different feel to the offense and just the entire operation on the ice. Like, I know the defense has been active under Peter Laviolette over the years, but you look at the goal that Ryan Ellis scored on opening night, the goal that Matthias Ekholm scored Saturday night, the goal that Roman Josi, his first one last night, all at even strength, if memory serves correct. All the defenseman is active right in front of the goalie and scoring those goals. I don't know. I kind of like where this thing is going right now. And I know, again, ebbs and flows happen, but this offense might be as good as it has the potential to be as good as it's ever been.
The most telling stat for me is that They're three games in, and that actually makes my point even more, actually, stronger, is that they're three games in, and every skater who has taken the ice for the Predators, sans Matt Irwin, Dan Hamhuis, and Yannick Weber, have at least 1 point already.
Mm-hmm.
That means that the attack can come from anywhere.
It's not just
at
the
any time,
right?
The opposing defense can't just focus on, well, okay, well, they'll focus on the Johansson line. Oh, well, then Duchesne will burn you. Okay, fine, we'll focus on the Duchesne line. Well, all right, fine, but then Colton Sissons will come out and burn you, and Austin Watson will get some. I mean, they just come in waves with very few exceptions in the third pair. Other than those things, this team can attack at any time from anywhere.
The Forsberg, Duchesne, Grand the line is getting all the headlines.
As they should, right now.
Here's where I would get excited about the ceiling and the potential of this team.
Okay.
If Craig Smith, Ryan Johansson, and Victor Arvidsson get going at 5-on-5, I think they're still trying to work through the chemistry. We're about to hear from Ryan Johansson on the postgame show last night talking about trying to find chemistry. There was a play in the first period, a shift that they had, where I think Craig Smith and Victor Arvidsson almost ran into each other at the blue line. You know, it stopped their momentum going into the offensive zone. And there, I think, are some little things that they're trying to work out. But I think if that line gets going, the potential for this offense goes next level. And they're just working through the kinks right now to try to get to that point. And that's what Ryan Johansson said last night. Here was Johansson on the postgame show with myself and Hal Gill.
Yeah, it's an adjustment for sure. We got to continue to work at that, and starts in our practices right now, and just, you know, being on the same page and having a structure with the three of us, and you know, we're kind of getting a little spread out. We got to be able to support each other a little bit more and get a little closer and in the battles and things like that. But Smitty's a horse, Arvy's a horse, and we just got to keep working at it to get things going for us.
That was Ryan Johansson last night on the postgame show. And my whole thing on this is you've got one line that I think you can bank on 5-on-5 when healthy. Forsberg, Duchesne, and Granlund are going to be pretty darn good. If you can get Smith, Johansson, and Arvidsson going, all of a sudden the opposing coaches are going to have a hard time trying to figure out which line do they need to put an emphasis on every single night, or more emphasis on, on which Preds line do they put their top D pair,
right?
All that kind of stuff.
Their shutdown line.
Exactly. You have two offensive lines that can execute at a high level. All of a sudden, I think we can start getting excited about what this team could do this season.
I don't like putting a lot of stock in such a small sample size of three games, but we have seen, short of maybe a true contender, we have seen a diverse group of opponents in that three games, right? We've seen, like you mentioned, like Minnesota is they're not that good, and Detroit is kind of a pretender at this point. Like they're having success at the moment, but we know who they are. We think we know who they are. And then San Jose is a team that's perennially a good team, a playoff team, definitely, and they're kind of in the struggles. So we've seen that mixture, and I like that. You can say, okay, the Predators have been impressive against all three teams, sometimes the whole game, other times just two periods or whatever. But at the end of the day, you're right. It's been a sustained attack. It's offense from anywhere. And it's eventually going to get to the point where you're right, Porth, that the team that they're playing against has to say, all right, Duchesne and Granlund and Forsberg are going right now. They're on fire. So let's put our top D pair and our shutdown line when we're at home against them, and then we're going to just take our chances with the Johansson, Arvidsson, Smith line. But what that does is all of a sudden that leaves the third and fourth line, which I asked Philip Forsberg yesterday about the fourth line being not a traditional fourth line. He said, no, it's got to be the best fourth line. Well, almost he said it with a laugh. Mm-hmm. It says it's got to be the best fourth line in the National Hockey League. So now you're opening up the potential for those guys to get in on some scoring as well. And that can only help the Predators going forward.
Well, and we saw what happened to the Preds last year when they could only rely on one line.
Right.
The Joffe line carried a lot of the offensive weight last regular season, and they couldn't do it in the playoffs because the Stars knew if they shut them down, they were probably going to win the series.
Right.
And what happened? They shut down the Joffe line. They won the series.
And the key to that is that the confidence wasn't there for other aspects of the game. So even if they shut down the top line, the power play should be able to offset that. But then it wasn't clicking, right?
Yeah.
So, but now you have two power play goals in the season already. So there's a lot going on. That again, it's early. I totally get that, and I understand that, and I want to listen to that. But I see too much positivity to not be excited going forward.
So I have a quick take on Cale Yarncroke. I believe the Nashville Predators should bench Cale Yarncroke for a game or two.
Okay.
Coming up. If he does not get out of this funk that he's in, he has scored 4 goals in his last 71 games, including the playoffs. Remember that hat trick that he scored last November against L.A.? Random hat trick.
Yes.
Scored the hat trick since then, 4 goals in 71 games. And we're seeing Kyle Turris play better. He scored a big goal last night, but even in the first 2 games, I thought he played better than what we had seen for a lot of last regular season.
He looks great.
And I think you have to see what you have in Daniel Carr. I mean, Daniel Carr is someone that they were high on when they signed him in the offseason, AHL MVP. Who knows if he can really stick at the NHL level. But if Carr brings more offensive value with Kyle Turris and Rocco Grimaldi, and you can continue to get Kyle Turris going, and in the meantime, if you light a fire in Cale Yarncroke and make it known to him that his spot isn't guaranteed in that lineup, I think there could be some long-term advantages to trying to send a message to Cale Yarncroke. And that's just me watching this Preds team. I know he can be valuable defensively. He's on that shorthanded, that penalty kill unit a lot, usually on the second unit after Sissons and Bonino. But I think that is a player they absolutely need more out of moving forward.
Right now, first of all, I agree with you. But it is difficult to make that call, I think, because this is a guy who played 81 games 4 years ago, 81 games 3 years ago. He had some injury history. He got the 68 games, and then 79 games last year. But my point is, this is a full-time NHL player that you are suggesting they just scratch, right, and say you're a healthy scratch for a couple of games. You have every right in the world, and you're actually probably your logic is in the right place as well. It'll light a fire under him. You get the new guy a chance to see what he got out of him. All wonderful things. All good things.
I'm not saying to cut him.
No,
trade him.
Right.
I'm saying
sure.
If you want to get more out of him, then maybe send a little bit of a message.
My point, though, was going to be that he's a guy that his teammates trust. We've constantly heard he's one of the smartest players in the team. We've heard that several times, right? And so it'd be interesting to see how he would react to that, one or two games, just kind of healthy scratch, whatever. Because to me, right now, he's very Freddie Goudreau. And what I mean by that is he's a nice player. Everyone likes him. He's well-respected. But he doesn't improve your lineup right now, right? You put him in the lineup, he doesn't improve it, and he doesn't make it worse either. He's just kind of a warm body is pretty cold. I shouldn't say it like that. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there's no impact one way or the other when Cale Yarncroke is in the lineup right now. That could change tomorrow. It could change next week. But right now, you're right. I think we have not seen a whole lot of the old Cale Yarncroke.
He's not in the lineup to provide a lot of offense or score a lot of goals.
I disagree with that.
But, well,
because the third line is built like a depth scoring line. When you've got Grimaldi who wants to be, you got Grimaldi who wants to resurrect last season. You got Kyle Turris who's trying to forget last season, and he looks really good doing it. So he is kind of set up in a way.
Yes and no. My point is, you can't have him be a complete zero offensively. Like,
right.
When you're out there just knowing that or thinking that you're just not going to get much out of him.
Right.
And
I agree with that.
I would love for that to change with Cal Yarncroke. And if benching him for a game or two and seeing what you got in Daniel Carr and then putting Yarncroke back in the lineup, and, you know, if he becomes a consistent contributor offensively like he had been in years past, then I think that could be something worth looking at. I don't know if they would, but that's just me.
I'm interested to see what Daniel Carr brings to the table anyway. So I may have some personal bias here. I want to see what if he fits into the NHL picture, especially on this team. And honestly, guys, and I wrote this in my column at thegamenational.com as well, Daniel Carr and Rocco Grimaldi seem to have good chemistry in the preseason together, which shocked me because I thought those two guys were competing for the same spot. And here they were when they got together. So that even further invalidates your scenario.
Coming up next, the latest on the Roman Josi contract extension situation. There was a report from Sportsnet yesterday. We will share that with you coming up next. He's Jeremy K. Gover. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders live from Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. It is ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show, Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth, Jeremy K. Gover, live from Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. We are 30 minutes away from Smashville Live right here. Yeah, come on. Yeah.
That's the real show you guys are here for.
Yeah.
I don't blame you,
yeah,
by the way.
You guys aren't here to see us. We're here to see Kyle Turris and Dan Hamhuis, Braden Gall and Hal Gill coming up at the top of the hour.
We're the opening act.
Yeah. So, Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet put out his 31 Thoughts column yesterday. And it's always a very thoughtful 31 thoughts. And the number one bullet point I found to be interesting.
Not 17, not 26, number one.
Elliot Friedman's number one bullet point said, quote, one negotiation that has hit a snag. Nashville's Roman Josi. There was momentum in the summer that has stopped. Unless you're actually in the room, you're never sure if it's something serious or the two sides grinding away. But there is surprise it isn't done yet. That was Elliot Friedman in 31 Thoughts on Sportsnet. So I'm surprised that Josi has not been signed yet. Are you?
I am very surprised. And let me give you a nugget.
Okay.
This one from this past March. Yes, it's related. Go with me on this. Here we go.
Okay.
Pierre LeBrun, in a podcast that The Athletic does, said, and this is a quote that he said on the podcast, when he went to the wire with Ryan Suter, and Suter went to Minnesota in 2012, David Poile made a conscious decision that he would never go to the wire again with a core UFA. So last summer, if Ryan Ellis doesn't sign that extension 1 year out, I'm telling you this right now, Ryan Ellis is traded by the end of October of this season, unquote. Now remember, that's last season. So Pierre LeBrun is basically saying, through the things that he's heard, Ryan Ellis is traded by the end of October if he's not re-signed 1 year out. Nobody is talking about this quote that Pierre LeBrun has put out there in March. Probably because it's disconnected, but here we are with a core UFA.
They're not trading him.
I understand that, but I'm saying that there's no talk about it being pressure or, you know, oh, well, Roman Josi's got to get under contract because of this, because Poile has this rule that he likes to follow. Nobody's talking about it. Mm-hmm. And I am on high alert every day because I'm waiting for that shoe to drop. Well, not the trade, but just the fact that they're working to get something done. Or how long does he go? How long do both sides go before they make a decision one way or the other?
I expect at some point this season this gets done. I would be shocked.
At some point this season.
If Roman Josi, the captain of this team, one of the biggest arteries of this team, does not sign his long-term extension. I would be shocked.
I agree.
I would be floored if that does not happen. I am curious about a couple things in this. One, I'm curious where the Preds are coming in at in the negotiation and where Roman Yossi's camp is currently at in the negotiation. I don't think Erik Karlsson getting an $11.5 million contract this summer helps the Preds in that negotiation, because Roman Josi can make a case that he's one of the top five defensemen in the National Hockey League and is deserved to be paid like a top five defenseman in the National Hockey League. And if he makes more north of $9 million, all of a sudden he's the third highest paid defenseman in the league. So I'm not surprised that Josi wants to get his money, especially when he's been playing on a hometown discount for 7 years now.
When I look at cap friendly and I look at where the Predators stand going forward, the next biggest contracts coming up for Poile, a.k.a. he has to consider them when this Roman Josi negotiation is happening, is Philip Forsberg's contract at $6 million a year is up after 2021-22. So the summer of 22. Ekholm's $3.75 million bargain steal of a contract is also up at the same time. Those are the next two dominoes to fall, and Poile can't just go out and sign Roman Josi to a, I don't know, make up some absurd number, $10 million a year deal.
Sure he can.
And still have those guys also making probably at that point $10 million as well, if not in the ballpark of. But Porth, come on, not right now. But in 3 years, it will be around
$9 to $10 million. Who knows where that trajectory of contracts goes in the National Hockey
League. Right, and he has to be mindful of that. So I don't actually fault Poile at all for trying to get Josi on the cheap because he's got one superstar and one star caliber player on the horizon. Now, it's not soon, but he still has to factor it in.
Here's the thing.
It's not the Wild West anymore.
Josi has a lot of the leverage in this.
Of course.
Most of it, if not all of it. I mean, you're one of the top defensemen, offensive defensemen in the league. You're one of the top overall defensemen in the league. You're the captain of this team. You're one of the faces of the franchise. And you know if you hit the open market next July 1, you can make over $10
million. No question.
Well over $10 million. And this team just traded P.K. Subban. And Josi also knows that David Poile, David Poile can ill afford to lose both Subban and Josi in the span of 12 months. So
no argument here.
I think Josi has a lot of leverage. I do think at some point David Poile has to cave a little bit. Whatever the difference is in this, Roman Josi is one of your franchise players, and you don't let a guy like that get to free agency.
Another thing I will say, though, is that Roman Josi is 29. He'll be 30 before next year. So when the new contract, regardless of what it looks like or where it is, his new contract will start when he's 30. So if he signs with Nashville, if he re-signs with Nashville, he can get the 8-year deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
That will put him at 38, making whatever the number is.
Mm-hmm. 9.25, 9.5, whatever.
Right. That's 38 is pretty. Now, and Nick Lidstrom's don't grow on trees, right? The guy was like 43 and he played forever, and right, he was an all-star. So maybe he is the next Nick Lidstrom. I don't know. But my point is that that's an old age for a huge contract. And I don't want to hear about this, well, he's got a bargain contract now, they owe it to him. Bull. That's great, and that's awesome. And sure, that should be, that's definitely in Roman Josi's camp in their argument, that he's taken a discount for this long and that he deserves a big payday. And nobody's going to dispute that. My issue is that cannot affect what the Predators do and offer. They cannot be like, oh, you know what, he's such a nice guy by taking that real cheap contract for so long, we're going to go ahead and pay. They can't do that because, again, they've got Ekholm and Forsberg coming up in a few years, and they've got to be able to fit those guys under contract as well.
You got to fit all three.
Yeah, you have to.
You got to find a way.
Yes. And absolutely, this is the first building block of that.
You know what else I'm kind of curious about is a no-trade clause a part? Is that a part of this negotiation?
Would not shock me at all.
And the fact that it's hit a snag, according to Elliot Friedman and his great reporting at Sportsnet, that's something to consider because we know GM David Poile doesn't hand out no-trade clauses like candy, unlike some other NHL GMs. Another thing to keep in mind is Yossi's agent is based in Los Angeles. Where do they play this weekend?
In Los Angeles.
But
that's not if, in today's day and age.
Look, if David Poile's on the trip, maybe they have a meeting and there can be some momentum gathered that apparently has hit a snag recently.
That may be the case, but I refuse to believe that in today's day and age with technology the way it is that anybody needs. Wanting is another thing. I'm not talking about that. But needs a face-to-face to get anything done?
It's just convenient.
It is, for sure.
And
but I'm just saying, it's just to, you know.
FYI.
That's a four-year information. About the NTC, the no trade, we know Pecorino has a modified no trade, and we also know that Matt Duchene, in the last 3 years of his new contract, hasn't modified no trade. And we also know, well, we shouldn't say no, it was also reported that Ryan Ellis wanted a no trade last summer and did not get it. And so you're right. Poile does not give out no move clauses under any circumstances unless your name is Pecorino. And then, of course, just to get the Matt Duchene one done, he basically had to cave, which makes me think maybe to get the Roman Josi one done, he just needs to cave in that area.
So Adam Finkin of The Athletic was on Morning Drive earlier today. He said if nothing is done by midseason, that is when we should start getting concerned. Do you agree with that? Do you think it should be sooner than that? What's kind of your thought on that?
I think December 1st.
December 1st.
Yeah, I think so. I think December 1st is good because, again, if Poile has this, as Pierre LeBrun said in March on the podcast, The Athletic, if he does have this rule, this personal rule, that he's not going to go to free agency with a core free agent anymore, and that date seems to be, and I'm the one putting these two dots together, by the way, this part of it.
Mm-hmm.
If he would have traded Ryan Ellis by the end of October, then let's just call November 1st the deadline. I think you give your captain some grace there, a little gray area. Therefore, December 1st, I think, is when you... Because you can't go past the trading deadline. You're going to have to move him for something at that point,
right,
even though if you don't want to. Because they did that with Ryan Suter, and he can't get burned again. So, for me, I think it's December 1st. I think it's a good, logical date.
Coming up next, what do we think of this new-look power play the Preds have been putting out there the first three games of the regular season? And when can we expect UC Saros to start next? We will get into all of that coming up next. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover. Preds Insiders live from Brewhouse South in Cool Springs, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
Inside the right circle, Nashville zone, is Ryan Ellis. He gives to Josi, who carries to center. Off the skate of Sissons, coming down the right wing. Josi scores! Roman Josi coming down the middle. And the Predators are up 1-0. Eric Karlsson comes up, left side at center, gave the puck away. Forsberg flipped it back. Forsberg shot, he scored! Philip Forsberg! And there goes Brett Peterson to the parking garage.
That was Pete Weber last night on the call as the Preds beat the San Jose Sharks by a score of 5-2. As our player guests for Smashville Live coming up at the top of the hour have entered the building, Kyle Turris and Dan Hamuse. That is Smashville Live coming up at 7 o'clock. Braden Gall and Hal Gill will be hosting with them. So go over the power play through three games, 2-for-9, and it just looks so much better. It looks like it has a purpose out there. It looks like there's some urgency to what they're trying to accomplish. Not all nine power plays have looked fantastic, but I think the overriding theme of the early returns of this power play is that this is headed on the right path.
We're seeing a lot cleaner zone entries. We're seeing a lot more board work. We're seeing a lot more one-touch passes to create space. All of these things unanimously put it in a better position than it did last year. Because last year you had the drop pass. You had the multiple drop passes sometimes. You had all kinds of stuff. You had entries that would come in the zone and then immediately kick back out. And you had to reset. And we're seeing a lot fewer of those instances. We've seen some, but you're going to have that over a course of a season. But to see how drastically different it looks, to be able to have sustained pressure more often than not, to have sustained zone time more often than not, to register high-quality scoring chances more often than not. Maybe not shots on goal necessarily, but high-quality scoring chances. These are all great things going in the right direction.
I felt about mid-February, maybe early March, after the trade deadline when those new acquisitions still weren't getting that power play going, that it felt like it was at a point of no return. And I think this offseason was kind of a reset button for that power play. And the power play, man, you know, it doesn't just look different. They are utilizing their pieces different on the power play.
Yes, for sure.
You mentioned the one-touch passes. You have Matt Duchene added to the lineup. Victor Arvidsson is not just being a jump screener in front of a point shot. They're not relying on the point shot just at will like they did the last couple of years where it became very predictable. So I definitely like where this is going. Again, just three games. We'll see where it goes from here. But the early returns, I do like.
Yeah, they're clicking a 22% success rate right now, which is a full, if my math is correct, 11% higher than last year.
Yep.
Now, again, it's early, right? But they've only got two power play goals, and they're going 22%. So, again, you're right. Things look better. Different players, Porth, we have not mentioned, different players are taking their chances as opposed to just, it's just bombs away from the point. You're actually going to have, you actually have cross-ice passes that are being fed through. You've got Ryan Johansson shooting the puck, Philip Forsberg shooting the puck. Victor Arvidsson is able to shoot the puck now. And in addition, you have the point shots available, but you're not relying on the point shots anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest key, I think, more than anything, other than, of course, the zone entries, because you can't do any of that without getting the puck in the zone. So
we'll see how that power play continues moving forward tomorrow night against the Washington Capitals, the last of a four-game homestand for the Nashville Predators before they go out on the road. And speaking of the next few games, always interesting to see how Peter Laviolette plays his cards between the pipes. Pecorine got games 1 and 3 of the regular season. UC Saros started the second game. Go over, how would you kind of see this playing out with Pecorine and UC Saros here in the next week or so?
Saros was not at his strongest against Detroit. He had some decent saves, but he wasn't. You certainly wouldn't say he blew the doors off the place like we know he can.
Right.
I see him getting a couple more starts this month to see how he's going to kind of fit in and kind of get him some game action. Because, again, sitting on the bench watching Pecorine doesn't help him either, right?
Right.
And they can, and I don't believe, I have not double-checked this, I don't think they can option him to Milwaukee anymore without exposing him to waivers. So that's out. So now he's got to get action in. So, and we all know he's a great goaltender. We all know that. But to see that kind of performance against Detroit on Saturday, although, again, the team in front of him wasn't exactly stellar in that first period either. I see him getting a start probably Saturday against L.A.
I would agree with that.
And probably the next Saturday at home against Florida. I would say those are probably the two. And then from that point, then you kind of see what you have.
Yeah.
Get his confidence back up and all that.
I think that's fair. I mean, the way Pecorine played last night.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a standout performance, but it was a rock-solid performance, for sure.
It didn't need to be. And, again, as we talked about earlier, he made the key saves at the key times.
Yeah.
He didn't have to stand on his head and be ridiculous. He just had to chip in at the moment that he needed to and rescue the game.
Yeah. I mean, I thought the biggest save that Pecorine made, as I said earlier in the show, was the save that he made on Brent Burns early in the third period when he went from his left to his right on the power play and shut the door on Brent Burns. And a couple minutes later, the guy standing right in front of us, Kyle Turris, goes down and scores a pretty big goal in that game. I think Pekka, you would like to see him get into a little bit of a rhythm and start a few games in a row, or start, you know, not go every other game to open the season and ease Pekka in. Just let him get into that rhythm right off the bat, but you don't have to go overboard with it either.
But you also, at the same time, you want to find spots for Saros to
sure,
to
but
play
it's not
well.
Like it was 2 or 3 years ago where it's going to
no,
be
sure.
every 3 weeks.
Right. No, that's very true. Because his workload's going to increase, even if it's just by a game, right? His workload's going to increase over last year going forward. So, yeah, you're right. But I think L.A. on Saturday is a good opportunity for him, and I think Florida the next Saturday is a good opportunity for him, because then he can get into game action, he can see some diverse rosters in front of him, and the Predators can get him involved as well while still allowing Rene to have 2 or 3 games in a row in between those games.
Tomorrow night, Preds Capitals, pregame at 6, puck drop at 7 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. As I've said a couple times in this show, I think that's going to be a really good test for the Preds. And Preds Caps is always a fun game.
Always. You know, Philip Forsberg was good for a couple goals.
Exactly. Or maybe a couple points.
Yeah.
But he has scored in all 3 games.
He has. He's looking to extend that streak. And, again, with his history against the team that drafted him, it's a pretty good chance that he's going to impact the score sheet at some point tomorrow night.
Absolutely. Gopher.
Porth.
Been a whole lot of fun.
Yep.
Thank you so much for coming by and joining me here on Preds Insiders.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Always good to have you by. Check out Jeremy K. Gover's work at thegamenashville.com and on the Nashville Predators Radio Network. Coming up next, it is Smashville Live right here at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Braden Gall and Hal Gill will be joined by Kyle Turris and Dan Hamuse for an hour of fun Preds talk. Penalty Box Radio coming up at 8 p.m. later on this evening. Stick around right here on your home of Smashville, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.